God,
God,
grant
me
me
the
the serenity
serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would love to welcome you. You can wave at the camera, or if your video isn't on, you can raise your hand virtually. Not seeing anyone. If you're new and you're shy, we'd still like to welcome you. Super glad. Alrighty. The AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And the format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And tonight we are discussing steps 5, 6, and 7. Please join me in welcoming our panel this evening. We have Ron and Ian. Thank you guys so much for being here. How this will work is I will read the first paragraph, which tonight is on page 72, and then the panel will share a few minutes each on the reading. So let me first pull up the reading. Bear with me. Alrighty. Step 5 is admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Step 6 is we were entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. And step 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. First reading on page 72. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which, when completed, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. This is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we have done well in admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. The best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves. But they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone else all their life story. And Ian, could I ask you to go first? You should be able to unmute yourself. Oh, we're unable to hear you.
There we go. I'm Ian, I'm alcoholic and grateful to be here, and thanks for having Ron and I. So there's a lot of reading and a lot of talking, so I won't get too much into anything but material here. So it starts with the sentence, having made our personal inventory, what should we do about it? And the real question is, why do I write a personal inventory? And for me, it's to confirm my third step requirement that my life run on self-will can't be successful. And I have to see exactly what my life looks like run on my own power. I'm not writing this fourth step to see what a bad guy I am or the bad stuff I did. I know that I'm seeing what does it look like when I'm disconnected from a relationship with God. And that's the best I could do. So we looked at the common manifestations, my resentments, my fears, and my conduct and motives with others. And so tells us that we get down to the causes and conditions. And then we come into what you just read, that we're looking for a new attitude, a new relationship, and discover the obstacles in my path. So I need to find out. See, when we get to the 11th step, it talks about a conscious contact with God. And for what I've come through this process, and is that I've come to the place that I've always have contact with God. He's everything. It's the conscious, the awakeness. So I need to find out what's blocking me from access to the power, not just to believe in God, not just to trust in God, but to have access to the power. So something's standing in the way, and we got to look at it and get down to the causes and conditions. So a little bit further, it tells me that we're going to look at the exact nature of my defects. So it's not just my defects, but what's underneath them. What's the fears that drive everything that cause me to take the actions I do in my resentments? What are the fears that drive me to treat people a certain way, to cause the harms, to act in relation, to come to relationships, seek and not given? What are the underlying fears and why do I have those fears? Well, when we wrote the fear inventory, it was clear that I have the fears because I trust Ian over God. And that's the bottom line. I took a conscious decision to step in the role that I assign, not that he assigns. And so it tells me it's difficult that I have to discuss these. And the bottom line is, why is this important? That's how I started, because I've got to see what in my life is objectionable. Because in a few minutes or so, we're going to talk about step 6 and 7. And if I don't see what's objectionable in my life, how am I going to make a decision to change? And if I don't change, I won't stay. That's how it works for me. So we're setting up 6 and 7 with 5. And the beauty about 5 is you get to do it and you get to receive it. So I get to let, I gave Ron my 5th step, which was an amazing experience some 12, 13 years ago. And then I get to circle all the way back and hear multiple 5th steps. So I'm not sure, do you want me to stop and then Ron jump in? Is that how you want to do this? So yes, go ahead, sir. Ron.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Ian. My name is Ron. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm really glad to be here tonight with all of you. And I like this format. It sounds like we're going to have fun tonight. I appreciate the sort of the structure here. A couple of thoughts that came to me is, you know, when I think about step 5, I think of my personal experience with step 5 and what drove me to being willing to have this kind of a discussion with someone else, a discussion I've never had before in my life. And I can tell you that the experience that I had with my sponsor the first time I did a 5th step, and I've done, you know, I've been sober 23 years and I've done 6 really serious inventories where I've done, you know, sat down and really done a 5th step as a result. And every time it's been an experience that changes me, or has affected me in a way that I was unprepared for, to be put it mildly. I could tell you what my own personal experience was when I came to this, what's described in this reading is, you know, I was ready. You know, and I don't know what anyone else's personal experience is, but I was ready. And the reason I was ready is because the fourth step was disturbing. You know, it really uncovered a manner of living, a manner of behavior that I really wasn't even aware of. I didn't have any insight at all into the fact that my life was being motivated by self-centered fear. I had no insight or understanding of what that was. In fact, fear as a word wasn't an active part of my vocabulary. I might have used the word anxiety, but I didn't use the word fear. And so discovering the self-centered fear in my life and the demand that I had for control of others really changed me just doing the writing itself. So when as a result, I was really ready when it was time to do a fifth step. And I've seen that in my sponsees as well. You know, one of the things that happens is I'm very careful when someone has said that they've completed their fourth step to try and make that appointment for the fifth step within a matter of days, certainly within that week. I never let it go any longer than that, because if they've got that fourth step sitting there and they've completed it and they're sitting in that fourth step, I want to make sure that I'm available to provide them a conduit to share that with another person. So a fifth step is really, really important in part of a part of a sort of the personal knowledge and a personal pathway towards a spiritual experience. And I was going to share one thing really quick and then we can move on. And that is when it says that they skip the step, they may overcome drinking. And while it doesn't happen every single time, I can tell you that I've actually seen that experience. A guy that I saw in meetings quite a bit, he'd gone through the steps and he, you know, was going to big book meetings and took the steps very seriously. He had a couple different sponsors and he continued to relapse. And after about a year and a half or 2 years, he came to me and he said, you know, I've heard that, you know, you are good with going through the steps. Can you help me? I need to stay sober and I want to go through the steps. So I met with him, and instead of just starting, you know, to open the book and going to the beginning of the book, I met with him and we talked for about a half an hour. We talked about what his experience had been, and I got to know him a little bit. And we got back together again a second time, and it was similar. We just were getting to know each other better. And again, my instinct was not to open the book right away and start all over again with the steps. And I asked him, I said, what exactly happened? What happened? Tell me what your experience has been with the steps. And because we'd taken the time to know each other a little bit better and he'd gotten a little more honest, he just looked at me and he said, I'll tell you what happened. I didn't really get honest in any of my fifth steps. I've done three and I wasn't completely honest. And I drank. And I said, you know what then? We're going to get together next week. And all I want to hear is that particular resentment. And we didn't, you know, I'm not advocating this, but I'm saying this was the truth for this particular individual. We didn't open the book. We didn't go through the first pages that I would normally go through with. I sat him right down and we wrote that resentment out, and he did a fifth step on just that resentment. And I know this is going to sound like a great story, but it happens to be true. He didn't drink again after that. And he had an amazing spiritual experience that day after having had finally told someone what he'd been withholding for, frankly, all of his life. So I happen to really believe when it says, if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. I believe it, and I've seen it happen. So that's my commentary on that paragraph.
Awesome, thank you guys. Our next reading is on page 73. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension. That makes for more drinking. Ian?
There we go. Thanks. They have me. I wasn't able to unmute. So, you know, one of the things I like what you read at the end is under constant fear and tension, and that makes for more drinking. And I have to think about, like, sometimes I can't forget my first step experience, even when I'm doing a fifth step. And I have to see, like, how this process really works from the reverse. And in doctor's opinion, lays it out amazing. It says I'm restless, irritable, and discontented. And once again, I can experience that ease and comfort. And when I succumb to the desire, I pick up and start the craving. Well, what it started with was restless, irritable, and discontent. Here they call it fear and tension. So I have to think about what would be conducive to set up a condition to allow my mental obsession to return. Because truthfully, why I go through this process is once I'm stopped drinking and I'm removed from the substance, the key is how do I stay stopped? The bottom line is not one day at a time for good and for all. So I have, for me, and this I'm just speaking for myself, the key is that I've got to treat the spiritual separation, because if I'm separated long enough, I'm going to get in fear and tension. As Ron always tells me, I'm either going to be in resistance or acceptance. And if I stay in that resistance long enough, I'm going to set up a condition conducive to the obsession to return. And boom, if my facts are similar to my experience in this book, I'm going to pick up. And it tells me something else here that I like to look at. You know, the stage character. You know, how many, sometimes, and I like to look at this from a different perspective. You know, we go to meetings, we share, we get up at the podium, we look like clean, you know, here I'm in a Zoom, I'm in a t-shirt and stuff, but, you know, you look at people and when we're face to face, and I will never discount this, that the most important person ever to come into a room of Alcoholics Anonymous is the newcomer. You know, and that's what our job is, to carry the message to the newcomer. But sometimes there's another person that's real important in that room. And he's the actor with 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 35 years, 40 years. And they got the stage character, you see. But they're dying internally of fear for what Ron talked. They're living on an experience they had 25 or 30 years ago. And they're suffering from untreated alcoholism, and they're dying on the inside, and they're not willing to let someone know that they're suffering from fear and tension, and they're going to pick up again. It's, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, I don't know when, it's not up for me to determine that, but if why we go through this process is to be spiritually connected, am I like in Jim's story? Am I continuing to enlarge my spiritual condition, or am I resting on my laurels? And what Ron said fits suit with me. Like I do, for me, some people could do go through 1 through 9 and then live the rest of their life as they quote in 10, 11, and 12. And if that works, that rock on. That's awesome. That's not my experience. I have to every time I take people through, which could be 5, 10 people, 20 people, it doesn't matter. I'm constantly doing inventory with them, and I'm constantly looking to enlarge my spiritual condition. So I'm not hiding the stage character. And when I do, I can tell and I suffer. Well, I'll turn it over to Ron.
Thanks, Ian. So all of that language in that paragraph for me boils down to a couple of descriptions and characteristics that I have seen in 100% of the men I've taken through the steps, and it's many, and 100% of the men I've sponsored, which is many. And that is, first and foremost, a sense of insecurity. They can be have the best jobs in the world. They can be financially successful. They can be apparently confident to the outer world in every way. And when they get honest and when we dig into their fears, insecurity is rampant. And I've done a couple, but not many fifth steps with women, but I can tell you in men, that is a complete certainty. And the insecurity takes a couple of forms. A form would be for someone who's a head of a family, a father, the insecurity is, I don't think I'm doing a good job as a father. I would never tell anybody that, but I really don't think I'm doing a good enough job. I'm not making enough money. I'm not providing. I'm not as good an example as I think I should be. I'm not really providing the kind of environment for my children that I should. And I'm completely insecure about my ability to do that. You would never know that because the principal characteristics I would exude are anger, arrogance, and self-confidence to the point where it looks uncomfortable, all right? But beneath that, I guarantee you 100% that you'll find someone who's insecure. And it was true for me. I mean, it got to the point when my fourth step, as I went through with the fourth step, the levels of my self-centered fear, I started with, wow, maybe I'm not a good parent. And then I said, oh, well, the truth is my kids are in a lot of trouble. There's a lot of things going on. There's so much going on in our household. It's certain I'm not a good parent. And then the next level down was, oh shit, I don't know how to be a good parent. What do? I'm lost. And that's the level of insecurity that someone who's apparently successful and confident and strong really has. Along with that, and maybe, you know, self, it's just another descriptor, is that sense of low self-esteem as a result. And so because I don't feel confident, I don't feel good about who I am. And that creates self-esteem. And then the third thing that happens that this paragraph is describing is a fear and tension. And I can speak for the men that I've taken through the steps. You know where they really discover that fear and tension? They discover it in the reality that they're so overly concerned about what others think of them that they actually find that that is their motivator. Why did I do that yesterday? Oh, because I wanted to look a certain way. Why am I planning this tomorrow? Oh, because, you know, I think people will look at me a certain way and I'll look better if I do that. And so the motivation is coming from a reliance on how others see me. And if I fail in that, I'm full of fear. So that's what those paragraph is summing up for me. And that is what the men I've taken through the steps discover. And that discovery itself can be a powerful, positive process once we get there. I know for myself, it sounds like it's negative. Like all of that is, you know, shit, I don't want to know all that stuff. But the truth is you get there and you realize, oh, that's the problem. That's the problem. The problem is I think I can control the world I live in. I think I can control others. I think I can control how other people see me, and I fail at it. And that failure results in fear and tension. All right. So that's for me what this paragraph is describing. And the last thing I'll say is Bill, in the late 50s, Bill Wilson wrote an essay that was in Grapevine called Emotional Sobriety. And in there, he actually described this differently. He described this as a form of dependence. And the dependence that Bill Wilson described in that essay was, we become so fearful of what other people think of us, right? We end up becoming dependent on their complimenting me and providing me with reinforcement that if I don't get that, I go into another form of fear and tension. All right. So those are the things that that lead us to the fifth step. And I'll just tell you, I listened to two fifth steps this summer. And the second one I did we went down into this, and Ian knows where this place is, at the Shrine, actually, Ian. It's a shrine, a church that behind it has this valley with all kinds of religious monuments, and it's for meditation, and it's really set up to be a spiritual place for retreats. And as we're walking into the valley, the guy says to me, we're going to go down and sit in this area and do the fifth step. He goes, you know, every negative characteristic you can describe, fear, anger, resentment, anxiety, worry, every one you can describe that's in that category, I'm at the worst I've ever been for all of them. And I started laughing. He didn't think it was very funny. And I said, well, that you're in a perfect position then. This is going to work out great. And I'll tell you what happened as we go through the next couple of paragraphs. Thanks for letting me share.
Awesome. Thank you. Good stuff. Next reading is on page 75. When we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time. We have a written inventory and we are prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we are about to do and why we have to do it. He should realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. Most people approached in this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. And Ian, let me get you unmuted.
Boy, technical difficulties I keep having. I don't know why. Maybe I'll just stay unmuted. Thanks. And so here's the one thing that we always have to, for me, I have to remember when I'm working with somebody and through this process, is that this book was written in 1939. We didn't have Zoom then. If you got this book in 1939, I'm looking at 9 people. There probably weren't 9 people that had been through this book at that point, maybe not even that you would know. So it's telling me that I need to explain to someone what I'm going to do and why. Now it's kind of reverse. We get to tell them what they're going to do and why they're doing it. And I always need the two things I always try and reinforce with people that I take through this process is, first, why I'm doing it is because on page 44, it tells me that lack of power is my dilemma and I need to find a power greater than myself. And then it tells me that's what this book is about, to enable me to have access to the power. So that's why I'm doing this. So I can, you know, we come into this process, it's crazy shift. I came in to figure out how I'm going to figure out why I'm drinking wrong. And it wasn't working. And then, you know, 14 years later, I look at that, I come in, you know, that how did I come into here to get a relationship with God? You know, like, whoa, I went from, you know, one area to another. So the real process here is that we're gifted today that there's no shortage of people that should be able to hear your fifth step. And then it says, you know, these fifth step promises, and man, they are powerful because I can, you know, like I could tell you that, you know, experience after experience after experience from my own to other, I took someone through this 12 step process. This guy studied his shoelaces. I'm surprised he didn't have like a hole in the top of his head, because he couldn't even look up to look at people in the face. He just looked down all the time. And then I remember one day I said, Chris, You know, you look at people in the eye, you talk to them. You know, it says we can, you know, we can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. You know, take that into consideration. Can you stay alone and be in peace and ease? You know, can you be gifted that you don't, there's no FOMA going in your life that God forbid you're not there, you're here. You know, how about the gift that the drink problem has disappeared? And I love this. You know, back in the second step, it talks about, you know, the great reality deep down within. And it tells me, if I want, I can join you on the broad highway. Now, Ron and I live, and Bobby and some of the other people, we live in an area where this big book was written. And that broad highway is the Jersey Turnpike. And, you know, and really, so they're talking about when, before the Jersey Turnpike was done, if you wanted to go from New York to Philadelphia, you had to go on Route 1 and stop at intersections and stuff. So they're talking about the broad highway. Like, you could just travel down this with God, like just cruising on cruise control and no longer have to be worrying about stopping. And, you know, and here it's telling me that we feel like we're on this broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. And for me, one of the things, and Ron will probably share the same experience because it's just amazing. My relationship with Ron, like, has grown from a sponsee to almost like just a spiritual relationship that I can't even put on paper, put in words. But, like, I remember telling Ron when I was doing my fifth step with him, which was the first real fifth step I ever did. And, like, the third step promises started coming. I didn't experience the second and third step. And then all of a sudden I started seeing all this stuff, how I was the actor being the director, how all these troubles were my own making, what Ron was just talking about, the role I needed you to play in my life so I could be okay. And how this shift started, that little, it was like little chips of blocks coming off of me that I no longer needed you to like me to be okay. And that came to a shift where if I'm good with me, I can be good with anybody. It doesn't really matter. And the second shift that happened at that point was, I don't have to like you, but I have to love you. And it became a wholehearted transformation. And I could tell, I'm going to turn this over to Ron, but at that point, it was no longer about the black part of the page. It was no longer about knowing the stuff in this book. It was a shift on being this book and doing this stuff. It didn't matter what I knew, what was I doing? And it was just an amazing experience. And passed around.
Thanks, Ian. So these paragraphs, at least the beginning part of it, talks about the process itself. You know, I'm going to sit down with somebody and I'm either going to do a fifth step or I'm going to listen to a fifth step. So what does that look like and how does that work? And the first thing I'll say is, I always say to my sponsees when we sit down, this is not a mechanical review or a interview or a conversation that's going to come from necessarily what you wrote. All right. Because what you wrote is already completed. It's not a mechanical exercise or an educational exercise. It's a spiritual experience. It's meant to be in, we're meant to do this in the moment. It's only going to be as effective as possible if we're both present. That I'm present and a good listener and available to you, not only in terms of my listening to what you're saying, but how you're saying and what you mean by what you say. So we don't start the inventory process right away when we get together. We find a place that's particularly suited, like this valley that I'm talking about with Ian, that's going to be spiritual and quiet and provide us the right kind of environment. And then we begin by praying together and meditating. And our prayers always are prayers of honesty, prayers of truth, prayers of mutual trust, prayers of openness, prayers of open heart. And those kinds of prayers result in a period of meditation that allows us to sit with those kinds of thoughts before we begin speaking with each other. That's how I enter into a fifth step through a spiritual gateway, as opposed to an educational exercise. And I do that with every sponsee. And it makes for a more powerful experience, I think. And a couple of the comments I'll make about the process itself. You know, we'll typically start out by having a sponsee read to me his inventory. He reads off of his resentments. And, you know, early on, I was pretty strict or pretty straightforward with how this was going to go. Read me your resentments one at a time. Then we're going to go to your fears, and don't get to the third page before we finish the first page. Let's just be focused. And I've really learned that in the spirit of what I described earlier as this being a spiritual experience. And it took me a while to get here, so I'm not really that smart. But it now really flows very much from inspiration. It's very common that, you know, we'll go through the first two resentments, and those resentments uncover a self-centered fear. And I might ask them, well, is, you know, those fears are so obvious that in your first two resentments, is that fear on your fear inventory? And they'll say, well, yeah, the fear inventory has that. And I'll say, well, what does that look like? Tell me how that fear is expressed on your fear inventory, and what it is you're afraid of, and where you've put yourself ahead of God. Tell me how that's worked in your life. And then from there, we might go back to the inventory, and we might go back to another resentment. And I'll say something like, this just happened, this last inventory. And I'll say, well, that's a coworker. So what you're really talking about is resentments you have in the workplace. And he said, yeah. And I said, well, do you have others? And he said, yeah. I said, well, why don't we put them all together? And pretty soon he's describing to me this friggin' resentment he's got toward his workplace, the people that live there, the people that are there, the office itself. And it became clear to me that that needed to be discussed in a holistic way. And the same thing often happens in both of these last two fifth steps I did. Same thing often happens with family. So if a resentment crops up that's family related, I'll say, well, who else in your family, you know, who else in your immediate family, you know, lived with you at that time? Or was the family all together? Were your brothers and sisters in the household? And we'll start to describe that. And the next thing you know, he'll be grouping the family together. And the powerful thing that's happened to me as a result of that is they discover on their own, you know, I'm just a guide. They discover on their own truths about their family experience, truths about their workplace experience, truth about their relationships with friends that they were completely unprepared for, that they didn't even see when they had written the inventory, that they really didn't understand until they had gotten it grouped that way. I mean, this one inventory I heard this summer, you know, by the time he was done, there was a death in the family that resulted in some trauma for everyone in the family. And by the time he was done, they circled back and he realized that that death had created trauma for everyone in the family. And all the resentments and relationship problems he was describing, by the time he was done, he linked them all back. He did it, not me. He linked them all back to that common experience that they had had with this death in the family. And that had scattered the brothers and sisters in a way because they were all frightened by it and reacted differently. He never really saw the direct link until we did that fifth step that day. And I'm a little emotional talking about it because when he discovered it, he said, oh my God, this explains everything. I've been doing this for 20 years. I've been living like this for 20 years. And he literally said to me, I've got to go back out and talk to my family. And this is the guy who said he had every negative feeling and characterization that he could describe coming into that valley. And by the time we had left, I asked him, I said, are you prepared to go back out and talk to these family members who you haven't spoken to for so long with this reality? And he said he was. I mean, that's an amazing experience. So I guess what I'm stressing there is that what I can be as a sponsor or as listening to a fifth step, the best thing I can do at least in my experience, is to be a guide, but not to be over instruct it, to let it have a life and a spiritual life of its own. And that becomes, I sometimes tell them, they'll say to me like, well, what are you trying to say? And I said, I'm not saying anything. I'm a mirror. Okay. I'm mirroring back to you what you just told me. Like, I actually had some people say that to you sometimes. Well, why would you say that? And I'll say, I didn't say that. You just said it. And so my role is to be a mirror that allows them to discover for themselves. And I think I'll add this to this particular session. When I take guys through the steps, one of the most important things, and Ian and Bobby know this, is I tell them that this is not a process of knowledge. It's not something to be learned. It's not something to be studied. It's not something to be particularly knowledgeable about as to the book itself, and or the mechanics of the steps, or to memorize, or that I can learn from, that they can learn from me. That is not what the steps are. The steps are experiential. They're designed to allow the individual who's going through it to have his own experience. For me to tell someone else that they're powerless over alcohol is completely ridiculous. The question is, do you believe you're powerless over alcohol? It doesn't do any good for me at all to say, you know, that there's a power greater than yourself that can restore you to sanity. The question is, have you come to a place through this process where that is true in your heart? That's your experience. And so it's the experiential process, not the knowledge. And so, it's great for me to see another man go through this and then have that experience that literally changes their life. You know, the guy that went with me down in that valley, he left being prepared to do amends. He's already done one of them with his family members who he was estranged from, you know, and was committed to staying estranged from. And this weekend, he's going to be doing reading a letter at the cemetery to that person who passed away, the family member who passed away. So it's a lot of healing going on there. And I'll end by saying this, for my own self, for my own experience, the most powerful thing that happened in the process for me the first time I went through the steps with somebody who I think has been on this meeting before, Chris S. So we're all done with the fifth step, not done. We've gone through it. We're like, we've been in it for a couple of hours. And he actually says to me, he goes, you know what, I got to do something. But while I'm gone in the other room, he said, I want you to go back through that and circle. Just go through the thing on your own, kind of organize it and circle areas that you see that are common in the resentments, or see things that you think are patterns or that are linked together, and share them with me. And that's all the instruction he gave me. He wasn't any more specific than that. And that's why I say you don't have to be overly specific. And my experience was, I went through that and hunted down these common elements. And the common element for me was this. He came back and he said, well, what did you find? And I said, the thing that's clear to me is I have this pattern of hurting the people I claim I love the most. And the people that are closest to me and that are most intimate are the ones most likely to get harmed in my drama. And I said, and I can't believe it. It seems like it's a contradiction. I say, I love my kids, but yet they get caught up in my drama. I say, I love my wife, but you know what? She's the one who gets hurt the worst. And I said, so I've been doing this for years, that I've been hurting the ones that are closest to me. So that's the kind of inspiration or realization that comes out of this process that allows me to heal and to act differently and to construct amends that can address it. So that's my experience with the actual process of the fifth step.
Thank you so much. We've got about 10 minutes left and two readings, and they're whoppers. So I'm going to actually read them together and have you guys share on both of them. Fourth reading is on page 75. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? If we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step six. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them all, every one? If we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us to be willing. And on page 76, when ready, we say something like this: My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. We have then completed step seven. Ian?
Oh, okay. I am unmuted. Wow. So all this stuff Ron talked about, all the stuff that I shared in my fifth steps and heard countless fifth steps, men and women, you know, the common question that I propose and I ask and to take into consideration is, what do you find objectionable and are you willing to change? Because there's a line at the bottom of the first paragraph on 76. It says, if I cling and will not let go, I need to pray and ask God to help me be willing. See, what's the value to hold on to this stuff? What, you know, and I'm going to share something that took me 10 years to figure out. Like, the next line says, when ready, right? It's a big sentence, when ready. What am I ready to do? Well, I'm ready to go all in. I'm ready to make the commitment in this process. I'm ready. This isn't about working on character defects. It doesn't even matter what my character defects are. I became willing to change. I saw what's objectionable. I saw the stuff in my behavior. I saw the same stuff that Ron talked about. I saw it when I gave Ron my first fifth step and realized that how much I belittled my wife and didn't value what she felt. And I just did it out of what he shared, my insecurity, my feeling less than. So because I feel less than, I have to feel bigger than, you know, all the stuff that I saw. But all those things, you want to call them shortcomings, character defects, it doesn't matter what you call them. Here's the question: are you willing to change? And then when ready, there's a prayer. People think that these fifth and sixth step are just two paragraphs. They're the culmination of everything I did from the first page in this book. They're a culmination of my accepting what Ron said. Did I admit to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic? Have I come to believe, like Ron said, what's the point in getting restored to sanity if I've never seen insanity? And I'm not talking external, internal. And have I seen how everyone in the world ran my life because I needed them to play a role? And have I seen where I placed myself and all the fears? In the third step, it tells me asking God to take away my difficulties. Well, have I seen those difficulties? And when I see it all black and white right in front of me, am I ready? Because the beauty of the seventh step is all I need to do is turn to God and say, take all of me, good and bad, 100%. My judgment of what's right and wrong. I'm out of the business of judging myself anymore, because it's up to him to take away each day every single thing that stands in my way. See, if I'm still saying that's a character defect, then maybe I need to go back and look at whether I'm really willing to change. And the beauty of this step is it doesn't end there, because I need to bring that into my 10th step. Because what good is it to take personal inventory if I don't do anything with it? If I just call someone and discuss it and do the same thing tomorrow and the next day and the next day. I need to take that stuff and go right back into 5, 6, and 7. Am I willing to change that behavior? And then I say to God, here I come with another wheelbarrow of junk, and I'm getting ready to dump off the high dive and give it to you because I thought I did it a long time ago, but apparently there's a second level of insanity. See, the first level of insanity to me is the thought process before I pick up a drink. But when you're around here for a little while and you're doing this stuff, there's a second level of insanity that I can run my life again. And I don't need God. He's too busy. So I say this 7-step every single day. And I just say, God, here I am. Take me good or bad, right or wrong, left or right, tall or short. It doesn't really matter. And then if you think it's good for me, give it to me today so I can go out to this world and be the best Ian I could be every day. And I mean, this program is really simple when you really just realize what it's all about. And I started with this. I have to have a first step experience and be completely hopeless, powerless, insanity, and unmanageability. And just realize that the whole purpose of this book is to enable me to find a power greater than myself, which will be solve my problem. See, if I'm sponsoring you, I don't want to be your problem solver. I want to take you to the problem solver. I don't want to be, I can't manage my life. I can't manage yours. And that's the gift. And the most important thing I can say before I turn this over, because we're talking about fifth steps and trusting people. You know, if you don't have a relationship that you like with your sponsor, find a new one. You know, find a new one, because I have two relationships in my life today that are more important than almost anything. First with God, and the second with Ron. And I don't put Ron before God, because if I don't have a relationship with God, I can't have one with me, and I can't have one with you or him. And then with him, and then when I have those two relationships right, I can have the most amazing relationships with everyone else around me. My children, my work, my family. And I'm going to pass this over to the guy that I love more than anybody. So go for it, Ron.
Thanks, Ian. So if you're working with somebody, or you're a sponsor, or if you're someone who's been through the steps before, I'm going to give you a little perspective that might be worthwhile. If you're newer and you're going through the steps, I would tell you, just take one step at a time, follow it carefully. But if you've been able to develop some perspective from a distance of having gone through the steps once or twice, or taking many people through the steps, I want to give you this perspective. What is the point of the fourth step and the fifth step and 6 and 7? There's only one point, and that is to tee up our 9-step amends. That's the real purpose. And what is the purpose of the 9-step amends? To put us in a place that we can develop a relationship with a higher power and be truthful and honest enough with ourselves that we can help others. That's the process. Okay? Work in the step in 6 and 7. If I, through this experience, the truth about my behavior, how my wife, how I've treated kids. You know, Ian, really, you know, I'll give you an example. So that allows me character defects that are causing that, and to find a way to get back through amends to healing and redeveloping that relationship. Okay. And so if I find that I've been a bad husband in the sense that I've overpowered or dominated my wife, or put her in a position of not, of being really putting her in a position of being less than, and we've really put her in a position of being emotionally abused. I need to discover that and be truthful about myself about what I've done. And that enables me then to say, am I willing to let go of that anger and that fear and that self-centeredness that took me to that place? And as a result of that, am I capable of sitting down with her and being honest with her about my truth for that, of that behavior, and being willing to ask for forgiveness and a way that we can redevelop a relationship going forward? That is the continuity of the process, right? They aren't individual steps in the sense that they end in any one place. They're there to provide that healing, that healing. And where is that most clear? And then I'll just kind of get off. The last thing, yeah, so where is that most clear? I'll show you where it's clear in the seven-step prayer. It says, my creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad, which is my way of saying, I give up. I surrender. It doesn't mean, oh, I know what to do. I'm going to go change tomorrow because I don't know what to do. I need to ask for help. I pray that you now remove from me. I don't take it away. I don't change tomorrow. The idea that I'm going to change tomorrow is my ego coming right back in the picture, right? I need to take away the notion that I know how to change and how to be a different man because I've already failed at it. So I'm asking for help. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character. And it doesn't say remove every single defect of character that I can have relief. That's what people think. Oh, I need to be relieved. I want to personally feel better. I want to overcome my emotional doldrums. You know, I'm so down. I want to feel joy in my life. That's not what it says. It says remove every single defect of character that stands in the way of my usefulness to you and to my fellows. This process is enabling us to help others. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. So it's a long game. The long game is to discover the truth about yourself or for myself. And that discovery leads me to a place where I can develop a relationship with a higher power and a trust that I can heal while surrendering. And that I can heal relationships by going and asking for forgiveness in a way that I really didn't think I was capable of. So thanks very much for letting Ian and I be here tonight. I hope that we've brought you some insight into these steps. I know that it's been a powerful experience for me. So thanks, Ian, and thanks to the entire group.
Yes, thank you guys so much. It was a really, really good meeting. And I'd like to encourage everyone to stick around after the Lord's Prayer. We'll unmute everybody and give you a chance to thank Ron and Ian in person. Thank you guys again. Awesome. We're now going to pass the Seventh Tradition Basket. You'll find the link in the chat pod for that. And the Seventh Tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the Seventh Tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements at this time? Any meeting closures or openings? Anybody want to share some links? Looking for virtual hands. Not seeing any. All right, move on. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Thank you. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. Or if you're shy, feel free to send an email to info@simpleactions.net. In closing, can we thank our panel once again for sharing? Thank you guys so much. And thanks to all who participated. I will unmute, as I said, everyone after the Lord's Prayer and give you a chance to say thank you to Ian and Ron. And I have asked Leslie to read page 160. 64. Get her unmuted. Pull that up on screen.
I'm Leslie, I'm an alcoholic. Hot dog. Great meeting, gentlemen, and everybody else in here tonight. Hey. Page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we only know a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thanks for letting me read, bud.
Thanks, Leslie. Thanks, everyone, for a great meeting. For those who would like to join, I'm going to close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Thank you, guys.
Oh, thank you both so much. That was amazing.
Thank you, guys. Great stuff.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very, very much.
Thanks, Ron and Ian.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much, guys.
All right. Thanks for letting us be here.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys. So good.